Hey friends, we wanted to take a quick minute and personally invite you to two really special gatherings coming this fall. First, our intentional motherhood retreat in Portland, Oregon, October 15th through the 17th, and then our intentional fatherhood retreat in Austin, Texas, November 12th through the 14th. Honestly, these retreats have become so much more than events for us. They've become spaces where people encounter God, experience healing, honesty, friendship, freedom, and real transformation. We live in a world that is full of information. We have podcasts, books, content, advice, but transformation requires more than information. Sometimes you need space, you need community, you need honesty, you need the presence of God, and you need to get around other people who are fighting for the same things you are. At these events, we've watched marriages soften again. We've watched fathers come out of hiding. We've watched mothers breathe deeply again. We've watched people feel seen, known, challenged, and deeply encouraged. And we would genuinely love for you to join us. You can learn more and grab tickets at intentionalparents.org. And for all things fatherhood, you can visit intentionalfatherhood.org. We hope to see you there. All right, Phil and I wanted to take a minute and let you know about something cool. Phil, you ready to let people know about something cool?
I am ready.
We have something called the Intentional Leadership Retreat. It is in Lake Tahoe, and it is from Tuesday, June 20th through Friday, June 23rd. Tell us what it's about.
Well, everyone might not know it's Lake Tahoe, California, but it is.
Yes.
Yeah, one of the things we love to do at Intentional is we feel called to strengthen the local church through helping parents, but also helping pastors. And so if you're a pastor, lead pastor, associate pastor, and you want to come and bring some of your elders or ministry team leaders, just for a week of refreshment and encouragement and teaching. We have sessions in the morning, sessions at night, and it's just one of the most beautiful places in all of California that you have the afternoons free to hang out and get some rest, hang out with your team. And so we do this. This will be our third year. I think we've done it.
Third year. And a great announcement is Jerry Sitzer is going to be speaking there this year. You and Diane are going to be there. John Mark Comer, your son, is doing a Q&R. It's going to be a great time. So join us this coming June 20th through the 23rd. The link is in the show notes, or you can always go to intentionalparents.org/leadership retreat. Welcome to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Intentional exists to help parents in their God-given task to raise passionate Jesus followers. We exist to bring hope, help, and healing to families. Each week, we will talk about anything from parenting, marriage, lifestyle, and what it looks like to follow Jesus in our time. Intentional is made up of Phil and Diane Comer and Brooke and Elizabeth Moser. I am Brooke, and the funny thing is, we are all family. Elizabeth is Phil and Diane's daughter, so we're a family figuring this thing out together. We hope this podcast feels like you're sitting with us in our home talking about how to do this thing called life together. Elizabeth and I are your hosts. Let's get into this week's podcast. Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Thank you everybody for tuning in and listening each week. Thank you for all of the wonderful people who have left comments and rated the podcast. And whatever platform you're on, would you just take a moment and rate the podcast? Just to even take 10 seconds. That's super helpful for us. Even leave a comment and hit the subscribe button, because then every week when we release new content, and sometimes more than once a week, you'll know, come right to the top of your feed. So if that's helpful, take advantage of that. Today, as Phil was just talking about delayed gratification, we're talking about some fun stuff today. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about really fun things. And we're
delayed gratification isn't fun, but it's good for us.
It's good for us. But that's not actually what we're talking about. We're actually wanting to bring a topic up today that I think is absolutely important. I know I do really, I resonate with this, and I resonate with it because I've experienced it. But that's the two words put together: optimal deprivation. This idea that there's a certain level of deprivation that we need to actually thrive. And with our kids, mm-hmm. they need a certain level of optimal deprivation. as adults, we need optimal mm-hmm. deprivation. Mm-hmm. And in an affluent society, it's a really big issue.
Yes.
There's all these studies that go on right now, and I'm just setting the stage, so, and we're all going to speak to this, but there's all these different studies going on right now about kids that get everything. Because we're in a stage of time where there's more money in the world mm-hmm. and there's a lot of people that have
and
money.
More leisure.
More leisure.
Yeah, they're saying more conveniences.
Convenience.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And they're finding that the kids that are the more wealthy the family is and the more those parents are like, you know what, we're just going to give our kids all the things that they really mm-hmm. basically need and want. Obviously their needs, but their wants too. They find that most of those kids are not optimally deprived, meaning they have to have a certain level of struggle, challenge, mm-hmm. suffering, pain mm-hmm. to become full developed humans. Yeah. And so it just got me thinking, oh my gosh, this is the scriptures. This is Jesus. This is what he's talking about all the time, that the way to maturity is really through pain and suffering and all these different modes that we experience. And so I just wanted to start the conversation today to talk about optimal deprivation. We see it in the scriptures all over the place, but I wanted to start our combo here. So I know, Phil, you said you had some verses. I know I do too, but I'd love to spark the conversation. So the table's open. Let's talk about it.
Well, why don't you give a definition of optimal deprivation?
You know,
how would you define it?
Yes, I'll give you my own running definition. This is scientific. No, it's not. Optimal deprivation is the idea that there's a line of deprivation that is harmful. Not having essential needs like food and sleep and shelter and clothing and love and care for emotional needs. There's a certain level, like if you don't have it, it's mm-hmm. actually going to be really negative uh-huh. for your development. Uh-huh. But then there's a line that gets crossed when you don't have a certain level of deprivation that it also then becomes negative. So uh-huh. you look at that, it's a balance of both.
Kind of a tension, isn't
it? It's a tension, just like Jesus talks about.
I think of like the word discomfort. Like there's a part that obviously when we're too comfortable, then we're apathetic. Mm-hmm. We are not trying to better anything in the world. We're not proactive mm-hmm. about anything. Mm-hmm. So maybe a word that could also discomfort. Be used there is what's an optimal level of discomfort that stirs us to actual action
mm-hmm. yes.
and growth.
Yeah,
this mm-hmm. also makes me think, so our oldest has dyslexia. And when he was first diagnosed, I read this book, I'm blanking on the name, I think it's called The Gifted Dyslexic, and it's incredible.
If you can look later.
Have dyslexia or know anybody who does, it's so good. But essentially, it listed out this like massive group of people who were either former presidents, billionaires, 80% of self-made billionaires are dyslexic, and then listed this huge list of people, Steve Jobs, Abraham Lincoln, like all these really well-known people, inventors, like successful people mm-hmm. all have dyslexia. And the number one reason they equated their success was because they struggled as a kid.
Wow.
And it was the fact that they had to struggle young that made them really resilient and really creative and really confident, and then could go on and think outside the box and be really successful. And that was like mind-blowing to me.
I see that everywhere.
Yes, yeah. And their brain works in a really unique way, and they see things in 3D and things like that. But the number one thing they were saying is they know what it's like to struggle mm-hmm. at a young age, and it's just a part of their life that they can't reframe. They still have to get through school.
And I love that you brought that up, because that is, I mean, we didn't even talk about you sharing that. I think that's the most perfect example, because it's a disadvantage that we would say as parents, oh my gosh, it's going to destroy them. And of course, it's going to be a struggle.
And we want to make everything easier for them because.
So for the parents that are listening and you're like, oh my gosh, my kids are experiencing some trouble, some pain, these things often are what shape your kids in the deepest way, in the best way, especially when they have a healthy environment to where to process it, right? Yeah. And to be a part of it. So basically, we want to talk about this idea that giving your kids everything all the time, you getting everything all the time, is actually not the best thing for you.
No.
It's mm-hmm. actually not even how God designed you. And that's what I want to talk about. One of the verses that came to mind, it was actually a few weeks back when we talked about understanding who your child is and, mm-hmm. and really getting that idea. We talked about Moses and we talked about, you know, unfolding.
An exceptional child.
Yes. Yeah. And there was that passage that we read through, but Hebrews 11:25, speaking of Moses, he chose to suffer mistreatment with the people of God. He preferred faith's certainty above the momentary enjoyment of sin's pleasure.
Wow.
Mm. It's the idea of like, there's optimal deprivation in there. There's a certain level of deprivation that was really good for him.
That gave him a level of freedom to make his own choices and not to have to cave in to his will or his willfulness that said, just don't do the hard thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's too hard.
Yes.
It's just too hard.
Yes. And that's exactly as we're processing all of this, you know, as I think of it with my kids, so often when I see them in pain, as a parent, my natural knee-jerk reaction is to just want to solve the problem, take the pain away. And of course, there's a lot of times when we need to actually do that. Mm-hmm. At the same time, there's a level that's like, no. It's the fact that you have to struggle through this to a certain level is very good for your development. Mm-hmm. It's very good for who you're becoming. And then I look at my own life and I realize the moments that I can actually see growth are not when I'm feeling great and everything is like I want it to be and I have an abundance or a gluttony of too much of everything. It's actually, those are my worst times.
Yeah.
The best times are often when there's a certain level of suffering or maybe just not having all the things that I hope for or want.
You are enjoying content brought to you by Intentional, a crowdfunded nonprofit that desires to help families and marriages all around the world in the area of discipleship and spiritual formation. This offering is completely free thanks to the generosity of our growing community of Legacy Builders. Legacy Builders is a group of people from all around the world that give monthly to fuel this dream that we have in our hearts of seeing discipleship to Jesus in the family become a way of life. A monthly gift of $5, $10, or even $30 can continue to fuel this ministry forward. Our dream is to invite people like you to join and partner with us at a financial level and see this work integrated into families. So as you listen to this podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us? Would you allow the Spirit to lead you, even if it's just to a few dollars a month? Thank you so much, and may the Spirit of Jesus give you wisdom, clarity, and joy as you pray about joining us. And if you want to join today, go to intentionalparents.org and click on Give.
Yeah, God uses what we would say hard things to shape us into men and women of God. Like, you know, you just mentioned Moses, and I was thinking, he chose to endure ill treatment with his people. Then the passing, you know, he was in the palace. He was a prince. He had everything, could have had everything. And the Bible calls it the passing pleasures of sin, pleasures of sin.
Yeah.
So there's pleasure in sin for a season.
Yep.
But then there's the results of it. And when God was ready to use him, what did he do? And when he fled, he was 40 years tending sheep.
And talk then, about optimal deprivation.
That's optimal deprivation. And then
to go from the palace
to the pasture.
His own sheep.
David went from the pasture to the palace, so to speak. He was tending sheep.
That's good.
And then God chose him, and then he became king. But Moses was from the palace to the pasture because God didn't do it to punish him. He knew he was going to use him to lead the entire nation of Israel out of Egypt, and then they were sheep. They were grumbling, complaining, and kicking against him. And he brought us out here to die, and you know, and it was hard. You know, at times he said, you know, if you're not going to go with me, just kill me
just
now.
Go.
You know, but he trained him for what you're calling optimal deprivation. Yeah. I mean, taking care of sheep in the wilderness. There's no water fountain. They had to dig the well and get the bucket and feed them and you know, go after the ones the lions were killing and all of that. And I feel like that's what shaped him. And then look at Joseph, the same thing. What shaped Joseph? I mean, he's mistreated.
Yes.
He's thrown in prison when he didn't do anything wrong. And all of that is preparing him for being used by God. And so anyway, a couple of verses that made me think of Paul, the Apostle Paul.
Yeah, I was going to say, Paul's a great example of
he
this.
He says, he's using this athletic metaphor here. Do you not know that those who run you like this, because you both run, and you know, we just ate some lunch and you're counting the calories in your little app. I didn't do that. I just enjoyed my lunch.
Don't expose me too much.
I'm just trying not to die. I'm seeing how many. He was taking a picture of the Trader Joe's.
I'm just trying
chips.
Not
like,
to
what are you
die.
Taking a picture of? You like that bag? You want to go buy them? No, I'm looking at how many calories are in a cup. And so,
But
some
so
of us, I'm optimally depriving you are, myself. Right. You were so that saying I can have the best version. Good. Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. What I'm saying, I'm just going to eat 10 more of those. You go, no, I'm not, because there's. Anyway, Paul says, "Do you not know that those who run a race all run?
Yeah.
But only one receives the prize. Run in such a way that you may win." And then he says, everyone who competes in the games exercises self-control in all things.
Yes.
Run in such a way as not without aim. I box in such a way as not beating the air. I, this is funny, my translation says, I buffet my body. And the old joke is, I don't buffet my body. I buffet my body. Another one says, I beat my body.
That old joke still holds
it
up.
It still works. Some old jokes just still work.
They still work.
I beat my body and make it my slave. And he's using this analogy, lest possibly after I've preached to others, I myself should be disqualified.
Sure.
Adokamos in Greek. So he's saying, like, I'm preaching how Christ can set you free from sin, the slavery of sin. But if I don't make sure that I'm walking with God, then I'm going to preach and I'm going to be disqualified. But the point is there, I love that. An athlete who's going to win the race,
yes,
is the guy who watched his diet and trained and pushed hard and lifted weights or whatever it is. And he knew what he was shooting for to win this prize. But, so Paul's using it to as a spiritual application, but and both are here. So it's like it's you know, what's the thing? No pain, no gain.
You think about every other part. This is so ingrained in our world, right? Mm-hmm. That it is so ingrained that if anybody that is actually successful, that anybody admires the thing that they did, there was deprivation, whether that was from a social life or from a certain level of cake and sweets. Mm-hmm. Or it was all the way to the extreme of the people that we revere that are spiritual. What are they often doing? They're depriving themselves in a certain way, a calculated way. Think about fasting, a calculated way, because they're wanting to experience something bigger than their own life or their own selves. And that comes through deprivation. And as a culture, especially because Phil, you brilliantly pointed out, we have more leisure than ever. We have more time than ever, and we have more money. I just think about this for couples and for those with little ones, how incredibly important it is. Like, you have to now work to build in deprivation for your kids.
I was just thinking that, like, it used to just come so naturally as a part of how you had to run a household and live. Like, it involved everybody, and everybody was working. I think even like our growing up, like Rebecca and I had, I don't know how many hours a week we babysat, but a lot from age like 10, 11 on, because we had horses and you guys couldn't afford the horses. And so if we were going to have the horses, Rebecca and I had to babysit and clean houses with you.
We cleaned cleaning crew
to pay for the houses. And then I all of a sudden realized, even a few years ago, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this with my kids? We don't have a farm right behind our house where they can go and have a horse and have to do all these things.
And it was all self-care for the horse. You had to take care of the horse yourself. So I remember you being out there in the pouring rain, not feeling good, but you
had still had to clean the stall.
You still had to clean their stall and dump loads of manure. Way on the other side of the arena.
Yeah.
It was so good
but
for
now,
you.
Now, like, I remember when I light bulbs started going off and I started to realize, wow, their childhood's very different than mine, and thinking, okay, well, where can we have them do stuff? And realizing our neighborhood has an HOA and somebody does our front yard for us. Yeah. All we have to take care of is the backyard, which doesn't take very much time. And we had to start to actually seek out, like, we have some friends with property who they were developing their property. So we had to go to each of them and say, do you need to hire Duke for anything? Yeah. Like, could you hire him to help do some manual labor? Because we really, it's a high value to us that our kids know how to work hard and that they're not overpaid for things, especially when they're young,
especially from their alma and pops.
I get an exception.
I know, but you guys,
I'm allowed to spoil them.
I love that you spoil, but it's so funny how, like, I do see how if it was your kids, you'd be like, no, underpay them. But it's our kids. We're like, the amount of work that they just did is not equated to this amount of money, and we have to give them.
You vacuumed the house, and he paid you $20.
No, I didn't pay her that much. Of course, I did buy her a camera with real film, and then we just bought her $45 for the film. And she goes, "Why did you do that?" I don't know, because I'm a grandfather. I get to do stuff like that.
It was so sweet. Well, it's very kind.
Optimal detrimentation.
I can't spank him, but I can spoil him.
So the horse story goes way back to when I was a little girl growing up in the suburbs of San Jose.
Yeah.
And I was horse crazy. I think I was born horse crazy. I just had all the horse books, all the horse stories, was in love with Black Beauty.
With Gen Z language, you had horse girl energy.
Okay, I had horse girl energy. I did, like crazy. Dreamt about horses, made up story in my head about horses, and told my dad I wanted a horse. I really wanted a horse. And he, by that time, was very successful at what he did. Very easy. It would have been very easy for him to buy me a horse, pay for my horse and all that. But of course, my dad was also kind of a just past depression baby.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was raised in abject poverty. And so he, you know, there's no way he was going to waste that kind of money on a horse.
Yeah.
But he liked that I liked horses. And so in about fourth grade, he started telling me, if you want a horse, you need to start saving your money. And I had a measly allowance, and then he started giving me jobs to do and saying, if you want a horse, you need to save that money. And I totally got in my head that I was saving for a horse. And I mean, he paid me 10 cents to do the Windex, the windows of the car. And if I didn't get behind the little lock thing, remember you used to have manual locks, so you'd always get little fingerprints there. I'd have to do it again, because whatever you do it right.
Yeah.
But such important lessons for me. So that by the time several years later, and I was 14 years old, and we had just bought a new home in an area, he was flush with cash because some good investments. Again, he could have just bought me that horse. And instead, he was helping me figure out how much money I have in my bank account and how much more I would need to be able to buy a horse. And we were looking in newspaper at, he was with me in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he was teaching me the most incredible lesson. I bought my horse cash. I was so proud of myself for buying my own horse. And then, of course, my dad was like, gave me a saddle for my birthday. You know, I mean, he was.
How much was the horse?
$500.
How long did it take you to save?
Well, from fourth grade until, so what's that, 10 to, I was like 14 or 15. And it was like, I babysat every weekend since.
To save $500.
Whatever that was. I hated babysitting. I was scared a lot of times at night babysitting by myself. But I was saving for a horse.
That's amazing.
Then, of course, there was some allowance, but I mean, that was it. Babysitting.
Talk about delayed gratification.
Yeah. That's it. Delayed gratification.
And then a little bit later, I started making good money helping people in our area who were well to do. Me and a friend, we would, just be in the kitchen during their very nice parties, catered, you know, not catered parties, very nice parties. Washing glasses, drying glasses, getting them perfect, getting them out until 1 a.m. or something, because I would be able to dump more in for my horse. And I was like 12 and 13 or 14.
Yeah, so good.
But the lesson learned is that horse was mine. It was my responsibility. I had to pay for rent for, you know, to keep, to board it.
Yeah.
I couldn't afford a nice indoor stall. This was in California, so he was out in a field. I was always trying to find ways to save money. And I was so proud of myself about it. To me, that was the achievement of my childhood.
Yeah.
Was that I bought my, and my dad bought cowboy boots and would come up and watch me around my horse. But it was my first thing that was all mine.
Yes.
That I'd initiated on my own. I'd worked for it on my own.
And
I took care of it on my own. And I felt like an adult.
Well, yeah. And how much more, like how, think about all those things that you would have missed if your dad came in with the money and just said, you want the horse? Okay, take the horse. Got it. You want the horse? Good. How quickly that would probably not have impacted you in the way that it did, the life lesson that was taught. But you said something about Grandpa Waterman, who the first interaction I ever had with Grandpa Waterman was when we were dating when we were 17. We go on this vacation and he had a boat at the time. We were going out on the lake. And he takes his shirt off. He's 74 at the time or something. And he was the most ripped human, not a let alone 74-year-old ripped human. I was like immediately completely insecure. I was incredibly in shape, but I was like, oh my goodness, what is this man? And he gets out on the water skis and just rips it up like I've never seen. It was so impressive. And but you know, you said something about him that made it interesting. He was a hard worker and he made a lot of money because he was really smart with his money, smart with his investments. And he was a what was his job again?
A nuclear engineer.
He was a nuclear engineer. But his story is fascinating.
Yeah.
He was 14 years old, correct? Uh-huh. So give that like 2 second story. Yes. So just talk about optimal deprivation, right? Yes. Like this might be a little extreme, but nonetheless, it's built into that.
If you're enjoying this content and you want to go deeper, we have an amazing resource that we want to tell you about. It's the Intentional Film Series, Raising Passionate Jesus Followers. Now, this is an incredible tool for you for spiritual formation in the family. And we created this film series to help parents in their God-given task to raise and disciple their own children. Now, our hope is that we're able to help you and give you some of the tools that I know we so desperately need as we're in the process of raising our kids, and Phil and Diane have actually raised their kids. This is a 9-session film series on the process of what raising a passionate Jesus follower actually looks like. There's some workable solutions in here. There's a bunch of wisdom from the scriptures, and there's a bunch of practical help in your journey as you are raising your children. We cover all sorts of things like parental roles, goals versus values. What is discipline versus punishment? How do I create a heart of obedience in my child where they actually want to obey? What does a heart of self-control look like? Or how do I even help my child in the process of character development? We cover that and so many more things. You can use this film series in a variety of ways. You can use it at your home, preferably with your spouse if that's applicable, with a group of friends or in your community, or even through your local church. All you need to do is head over to our website, intentionalparents.org, click on film series, and then follow the prompts. We have a bunch of other resources there that you can check out, but we do pray that this blesses you in your pursuit of raising passionate Jesus followers.
He was born and raised in Canada, in Saskatchewan, which is prairie, which is not a rich land.
Yeah.
And they lived on a farm, but his dad had only an education up to 8th grade, which was not untypical at the time. And he worked for the railroad, so he would be gone for long periods of time. But they actually had to raise food on their farm, too. So the 4 kids, 3 boys and 1 girl, helped raise the food. And they were just horribly poor, just like barely everybody had to contribute. They were hard, like the working poor that I think it was Obama talked about or something. One of our former presidents, I felt like that was my family background, the working poor. They didn't expect handouts. There weren't handouts.
Yeah.
There wasn't even really a safety net underneath.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of bad things that come with that. But he and his older brother was 15 and my dad was actually 13. Heard that from an uncle that there was work to be had in Eastern Oregon on the harvest fields, harvesting peas and harvesting wheat. Which have you ever Eastern, seen
like
wheat
where we're
be
at
harvest?
Now?
Yes,
like
no Eastern,
a little bit further. Eastern. Got it.
Way over at the border.
Oh, got it.
Border of
Milton Free Water, to be specific.
Milton Free Water.
So he and his brother hitchhiked at 13 and 15 from Alberta. Now, by this time, the family had moved to Alberta, Canada, all the way down to Milton Free Water. So who knows how far that is? That's a really long ways.
And they hitchhiked.
They hitchhiked. And no phones. No, nothing. Okay. There weren't even pay phones back then. Okay. There were phones, but no pay phones.
Well, what year was your dad born?
1934.
So this would have been like mid-40s, almost 50, like 1950. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Got it.
And they lied about their age, and my dad at 13, who was not a big man. Remember, my dad was pretty small,
But ripped.
Was driving but ripped.
Yeah.
Got a job driving the truck. You know, so
he was driving his 13-year-old.
Oh my gosh,
that's Duke right now, just barreling down the road with a semi.
Duke about the size of Scarlett.
Oh my gosh!
And then they sent word to the family: there's work here. The whole family packed things up and came down and moved down there. And Then another one story I absolutely love because I have a symbol of it. I have an old restored Winchester rifle. If you know anything those days, they're beautiful guns and single, you know, it's for hunting. You didn't shoot people, except for maybe John Wayne might have done it. But
people actually. Also, FYI, it's not like Phil and Diane are gun people at all. No, this is like an heirloom.
This was definitely, you know, for very low level hunting rabbits and things like that. But he saw it at a neighboring farmer's house and he just wanted it more than he'd wanted anything in his life. This is a very poor family.
Okay.
He wanted this Winchester and the farmer said, okay, if you work for me all summer long, at the end of the summer, you can earn the Winchester. He worked full time all summer long, hard labor on this neighbor's farm. And at the end of the summer, he had this Winchester, an older used Winchester. And I have it now and I want to hang it in my office just because to me, it is such a symbol of if you want something, you work for it.
Wow.
And yes, overwork is a problem in America for ambition and all that stuff. But there's something so valuable in not being entitled and saying, if I really could have that, you know, I could have that if I'm willing to make the sacrifices. And then it's okay sometimes to decide I don't want to make those sacrifices. I don't want that bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if we as parents are in a position that we can just give our kids, say, their first car, you know, maybe there's reasons that you should do that. But what an incredible. And actually, I have to confess here, my dad actually did give me my first car. So I didn't have to work for a car.
You and my dad did not give me a car.
But it was
my dad either.
It was a condition. You can either go away to college and I will pay for your college, but you will not have a car. Or you can go to college locally. It's your choice. And I buy you a car.
Yeah, that's
smart. It was a couple of years. 1974 Volkswagen Bug. So it wasn't like, you know, a luxury
car. Also had a 1974. You remember the gold Bug I had?
Yeah, I do.
I do.
Hers was yellow.
Bright yellow.
Yeah, mine was gold with a surfer rack. Yeah, I remember
Anyway,
that.
All of that to good say, time. Of course, I didn't appreciate it at the time. And luckily, I didn't know that my dad had nice fat bank accounts because he never lived like he had nice. He was frugal.
You know, it's so interesting, though, so often people who've grown up in poverty like he did and then have money later don't do that with their kids because they don't want their kids to experience the extreme discomfort that they did.
Yeah.
So just the fact that he had the wisdom
pre-days
of therapy or, you know, to know there was value in not giving you everything. And yet you lived in a beautiful home and you were comfortable and you had everything that you needed and more. But that
she had her own bathroom.
My weekends babysitting. I needed to work.
She had to sit on children.
And I mean, that's so like, thankful. As we're entering that stage with our kids or have entered it, we're like looking for opportunities. Yeah. And even like Scarlett got the chance to be like a mommy's helper. She's 10, almost 11, but she can't babysit alone yet. And it was super inconvenient for me because I had to do all the driving. And it was for like 2 hours in the middle of the school day, you know, not ideal for me, but it came back to, you know, we've talked about goals and goals versus values and high value to us is that they become really hard workers and that they understand what that means and that, and recognizing that has to start really young.
Yeah.
So it's like, this is worth driving her back and forth because of a greater good that I want to accomplish in her. And we can't always do that, but I think we just, especially in our current time when everything is so easy, we have to be looking for things that are not easy.
And it's not easy. You're right. It takes parents time because when our youngest one, Matthew, remember, he really wanted to work. He wanted money.
Yeah.
And he got this job at, remember that?
Pump it up.
Like a
one of these
party.
One of these inflatable, you know,
like
when you take your kids from a bouncy house, you know,
I
inflatable
that.
Party, you have a little bit of food. He was only 15. He was 15.
Yeah. But you could
that.
only work
so many hours.
So by the time I drove him all the way across town and dropped him off
and picked him
and
up.
Came all the way home, it was time. I had about a half an hour before I had to go out and do it again. But it was, but he caught the work bug.
Yeah,
and has loved to work ever since. He just likes.
See, I'm telling Duke, he'll be 14 this summer. I'm like, you might be able to find a job somewhere.
Yeah.
So start looking places you can ride your bike to.
Yeah.
Because very good.
See, we didn't charge Matthew for gas because it would have eaten up his whole paycheck. But we realized we were teaching him. We were thrilled to have a son who wanted to work.
Yeah.
And then for your generation, it's way harder. It's work to figure out how to teach your kids how to work because everything's automated.
I know.
And it's a big challenge. We need to think of ways to help parents with that. But you know, we all. Your dad could have bought. Some people can't afford to buy something for their kid. Other people have money and they just give them everything and you end up with a spoiled kid, entitled, who doesn't know how to work, which is not what we want. But then your father could have, but he was smart enough to know not to give that to you.
But here's the thing. It wasn't stinginess.
No.
He was very strategic about this delayed gratification or optimal deprivation, even though he didn't have the words to form it, because he was very generous in everything, paying 100% of my college.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And because that was a high value to him, because he knew that his education had lifted him out of poverty. So he wanted us to get a good education. So he didn't want anything to come between us and our education.
How much his life must have changed between, you know, that 13, 14-year-old boy working on the farm to college to living just such a different life. Uh-huh. His lifetime had so many different versions where a lot of kids have experienced that level of affluence and comfort from the moment they're born.
Yeah.
And that's not bad. Again, it's not bad. I think, but your dad was really wise. And I'm picking up on is, and we've even left some good examples here today, like there's ways to, even if you have everything, to not give everything all the time as a way to help your kids feel a level of weight, responsibility, deprivation for their best good.
And accomplishment.
Yeah.
You know, to own something that you sacrificed for is, you're going to take care of that thing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm thinking of, you said it earlier, honey, but all things are lawful, not all things are helpful.
Yeah. Yes.
And that's so true. Like, you can totally give your kids all this stuff, but there's like a level of stuff that's just not helpful.
No.
I think about that for even as adults. We get to choose our pain when you get older, when you're younger too, but when you're older, you get to choose your pain. What I mean is, are you going to be in pain from going on a run or exercising, the pain that brings? Or are you going to be in the pain of feeling just lethargic and high blood pressure and diabetes and lots of medication? Like, you get to choose. You can pick one or the other, but both are pain.
Yeah.
Like, we don't really get to get out of it. You just get to choose. And that's the interesting part, that even with, it's built into the way God's designed the world. Mm-hmm. And so I think even with our kids, helping
struggle a little is a good thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And even with our kids, like, to try to shield them from the reality of what life is, they're going to get to a spot eventually where they go, wait, I have to work through the summer. I remember recently Scarlett's been like, wait, Dad, you don't take the summer off? I was like, well, do you want to stop living for the next 3 months?
Yeah.
Like,
do you still need to eat during the summer?
I was like, do you want to eat food? Do you want
to
do this?
I do remember the first summer I had to work a full-time job out of high school, and just feel like this is just wrong.
Yeah. There's a level that it feels weird. But it's like those things, like, no, the reality is, this is life. And I think the more that we can realize that we'll never thrive fully if we don't actually step into that. God's plan for our own selves, but also our families.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a couple of things that we were just talking about, but there's an importance in not giving your kids everything.
Yeah.
And there's also an importance in not giving ourselves everything.
Yeah.
And I think if we sum up some of this, you know, conversation today, it's that giving everything all the time is actually not the best for our culture. Mm-hmm. It's not the way the world works. Mm-hmm. And the more that we can find ways to just optimally deprive our kids, which sounds so, it sounds weird to say, oh, I'm an op, but I mean, make it a thing. Let's make it a movement, you know, like we're just a group of people that are being optimally deprived. Could you imagine people if they don't understand?
And maybe if that, if that phrase doesn't resonate with you, not running to fix their every discomfort.
Yeah.
That there is a part of that discomfort that can be beautiful and good. And we're not talking about extreme things or depriving them of actual needs.
Or
you know, we said that
abusive,
at the beginning. No, not at all. But sitting with them, what does God do with us when we're going through something really hard or when really intense suffering hits our life that we couldn't predict or control, and it's not a result of something we've done, it's just result of a fallen world. Like, yes, sometimes he heals in an instant and he rescues us and plucks us right out, and sometimes he doesn't, and he just sits with us in it. He's always with us in it, regardless of the scenarios. And I think part of that is instilling that in our kids, that they're not going to be rescued from everything. Sometimes they will, but sometimes life will just be really hard.
Yeah, that's so important.
And yet God is with them, and he's the same good God no matter what is happening.
So important.
And so recognizing that, that we're actually doing a great service to our kids to allow discomfort when they're little and talking about, you know, we talk a lot about teaching your kids a theology of suffering, talking about your own suffering so that when it hits their life, because it's not an if,
it
does, we don't know what level of suffering is going to hit their life.
But
we don't
all
know.
Suffering is shocking.
Yes. And we don't know why some people have to suffer way more than others and some people don't. It's a great mystery to me that I have so many questions for God about it someday. But what we do know is that it's the same God with us in it no matter what. And if we can begin to teach them that and show them what it looks like to respond to discomfort, like, gosh, what a gift that is to them.
You're looking at me.
I'm always looking at you.
I did have one final thought. You know, I'm listening to this whole podcast and we're really talking about people that have the option of leisure. And that's our audience, I guess. But, you know, when you think of some people, this, they'd be like, what are you talking about? I don't know where I'm going to get my next meal. And, you know, we're in this nice warm house and my golden retriever is at my feet and we're, what, 2 miles from a hospital and we have cars outside. But I think it takes optimal deprivation to live in prosperity. And I was just thinking of the words of Paul who said, I know how to get along with humble means and I also know how to live in prosperity. And I think it's in certain ways, it's hard to live in prosperity because you have much. And so if you have much, then if we've been given much, to him who much is given, much is required. So we're to steward what we've been given, but we're talking about raising kids who know how to live in prosperity and how to handle leisure. It's what you do with it. You can just ruin your life with it, or you can learn how to work like Diane's dad taught him, and you're teaching your kids, and I'm really proud of you for that. But you know, Paul just talked about that. I know the secret of being filled and going hungry. So he knew both. And but it's not like, oh, it's easy to live in prosperity, but it's really hard to live in
poverty.
You know, poverty. No, he's it takes the Lord, and that's what he says. I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. He comes back and says, I can do it all through Christ. So I think we want to bring our kids to him.
And you're, that's a great way to wrap this up, and also to say that you're blessed to be a blessing. I think about you know Genesis 12, that if God has given you much, it's to be a blessing. Now that doesn't mean, you know, spoil your kids the whole nine. But it means that he's given you a responsibility. And I've talked to many people that have had this opportunity to have a lot of influx of money. And if anything, it is overwhelming how much of a responsibility that it is to steward well. And so whether God has given you much or little, we all have a responsibility to steward. But even if God has given you much, there's a big responsibility to much is given, much is required. All that's there, right? We talked about that. And so, yeah, as Phil, that's a great way to end it. We are blessed to be a blessing. And so let's figure out as families, and just even this week, would you even just take a second to think and pray and ask the Spirit to come into your family, your situation? Where are the areas in which you're inviting us into optimal deprivation? Where are the things that you want us to say no so that we can say yes to the bigger, better yes that God's calling us to? Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If this podcast has blessed you in any way, here's a few ways that you can partner with us in this ministry. First is to give. Intentional Parents is a nonprofit, and we rely on the generous giving of our partners. So please head over to our website, intentionalparents.org/give, if you would like to become one of our partners through giving. Second is to share it. If this has at all been helpful to you, we encourage you to share it with your friends, your family, and those that you know would be blessed by it. Third is to follow us on social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find us on Instagram at intentional_parents. And lastly, if you would head over to iTunes, if you enjoyed today's episode, and leave a review on iTunes, this helps us bring more hope, help, and healing for families.